Hi, Dave Emery here, side two of For the Record program number 808, titled Walking the Snake in Ukraine, part three, subtitled How Many Lies Can You Allow Yourself to Believe Before You Belong to the Lie? This has been recorded on August 31st of the year 2014. We're going to plunge right back in where we left off. Article from Consortium News from August 16th of 2014. The article is The Hushed Up Hitler Factor in Ukraine by Dave David Katz. I'm going to repeat the last paragraph I read before we took the break, just for continuity. Speaking of Yulia V. Tymoshenko, who was quoted on the New York Times op-ed page in May. This from the far-right politician who had shortly before that expressed genocidal musings for the millions of Russian-speaking citizens of her country, and who was, during her tenure as prime minister, a prime devotee of the wartime fascist leader Stefan Bandera, whose organization slaughtered tens of thousands, many historians put it at hundreds of thousands of Polish and Jewish civilians based on ethnicity in the Aryanist drive for an ethnically pure state precisely on the Nazi model. It was therefore refreshing to read in last Saturday's Times a report that had, albeit buried near the end, a single line informing readers that, quote, one militia active in the Kiev government's military campaign known as Azov, which took over the village of Marinka, flies a neo-Nazi symbol resembling a swastika as its flag. By contrast, London's right-of-center Daily Telegraph ran a whole report Monday titled The Neo-Nazi Brigade Fighting Pro-Russian Separatists, unquote, rightly including the observation that the neo-Nazi forces being used by the Ukrainian government to do military heavy lifting, quote, should send a shiver down Europe's spine, unquote. That's an article from which we quoted. Continuing, this goes to the heart of what is being kept from so many Western and especially American readers. Putin, for all his authoritarianism, anti-democratic bent, and revanchism, is not the cause of the Ukrainian conundrum, though he is certainly exploiting it. There is a genuine divide in Ukraine between a nationalist-dominated West and a Russian-speaking East. Anybody who has traveled in the country will tell you that these, quote, Russians, unquote, in the East, and wherever else they are to be found, would much rather be living in a European Union-type country than in a Russia-type country. What, then, is the problem? The problem is they do not want to live in an ultra-nationalist, read fascist-dominated state that is anti-Russian in a 1930s Aryanesque sense of ethnically and linguistically pure Ukrainianism. They much prefer the Russia model state to that. Now, those anti-racist values, including the revering of the Anglo-American-Soviet alliance that brought down Hitler and the disdain of societies founded on models of racist purity, are in fact also American values. But that affinity between Western values and the Easterners would never even be guessed at the avalanche of Cold War II newsfeed coming our way. Incidentally, some Western reports that caricature the Putinist press's use of the word fascists for Ukrainian nationalists don't appreciate the colloquial usage where it refers not necessarily to swastika-wielding thugs, but even to high society that holds in esteem the likes of Stefan Bandera and other World War II-era Nazi fascists as supposedly mythical, quote, freedom fighters, unquote, to be revered today by the state in street names, statues, museums, and more. That is not to say that America's allies among the Western Ukrainian nationalists are all pro-fascist. They are not. But there are two salient issues that go beyond Ukraine and cover all of, quote, anti-Russian, unquote, Eastern Europe, particularly the new member states of NATO and the EU. The first is casual acceptance of neo-Nazi elements, symbolism, and ideology as part of any kind of supposedly centrist mainstream. in Latvia, parenthetically, a NATO member, and Estonia, parenthetically, a NATO member, both, by the way, former Soviet republics of the USSR. This is exemplified by tacit or not so tacit state support for honors for those countries' Waffen-SS divisions. In Lithuania, parenthetically, a former Soviet republic and NATO member, it can be manifest in state-sponsored shrines to the Lithuanian Activist Front, or LAF, killers who unleashed the Holocaust on Jewish neighbors even before the first German soldiers had arrived. But there is a second issue that is much deeper and has nothing to do with these more ostentatious types of Nazi worship. That issue is history itself. While World War II is indeed history, unquote, for the West, it is very much part of now in Eastern Europe. State-sponsored institutions in three Baltic countries, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, parenthetically NATO members, as I said, and also at times in Croatia, parenthetically a NATO member, Romania, parenthetically a NATO member, and elsewhere, have invested a fortune in a kind of Holocaust revisionism that would whitewash their own nationalist collaboration with Hitler and turn the Soviet Union into the real Hitler. Known as double genocide, unquote, it posits the absolute theoretical equality of Nazi and Soviet crimes. Its constitution in the 2008 Prague Declaration, the Czech Republic is also a NATO member, parenthetically, which most Americans have never heard of, sports the word same, unquote, five times in reference to Nazi and Soviet crimes. Even fewer Americans know that one of its demands that the world accept a unitary mix-and-match day of remembrance for Nazi and Soviet victims was snuck under the radar into last June's Congressional Military Appropriations Bill. The issue across the board is the choice made by nationalist elites in Eastern Europe to construct national myths not on the merits of a country's great artists, great poets, great thinkers, and genuine freedom fighters, but all too often on the basis of Nazi collaborators whose claim to fame is that they were also, quote, anti-Soviet patriots, unquote. The fact of the matter is that virtually all of Hitler's collaborators in Eastern Europe were anti-Soviet. In fact, the Soviet Union was the only power putting up resistance to Hitler in Eastern Europe. If the Soviets had not pushed the Nazi armies back by the spring of 1944 at huge sacrifice to all the Soviet peoples, there would have been no D-Day or opening of a Western Front. Whether it is hero worship of Hungary's Miklos Horthy, parenthetically, Hungary is also a NATO member, leaders of Croatia's Hitlerist Ustasha, Croatia is also a NATO member, the Nazis' Waffen-SS divisions in Latvia and Estonia, both NATO members, or the likes of Ukraine's Bandera and his OUN and UPA and the Waffen-SS, it is an offense to Western values that a NATO or EU state or NATO-EU aspiring state would disperse state funds on the distortion of history, obfuscation of the Holocaust, and construction of societies that admire the worst of history's racists. And what we're going to do next is to review briefly an article that we read into the record first in AFA program number 36, and also that we reprised in For the Record program 778. We have spoken in the past about a covert operation called the Crusade for Freedom. This was a program that was undertaken at the end of World War II. It was conceived by Alan Dulles, who was not only a CIA director, not only invested much of the American power elite's money in Nazi Germany, including the Bush family's money. He also was Thomas Dewey's campaign manager in 1948. he developed a covert operation in tandem with Reinhard Gehlen, in which many of the Nazi Eastern collaborationist elements now being honored in Eastern Europe were basically grafted on to an element of the CIA called the Office of Policy Coordination and conducted guerrilla warfare in Eastern Europe, basically a continuity of combat from World War II on up into the early 1950s. At the same time, many of these same Nazi and fascist collaborators were brought into the United States, where they coalesced into a key element of the Republican Party under the Republican Ethnic Heritage Group's Outreach Branch. This was a key element of the Republican Party, viewed as being able to control five swing states in presidential election years. Again, the Crusade for Freedom, a tandem operation using fascist freedom fighters abroad and those same elements illegally in the U.S., it coalesced into what was literally a Nazi branch of the Republican Party. It was the godchild of Alan Dulles. It was overseen and administered by a Dulles protege, a young California congressman named Richard Nixon. Some of you have perhaps heard of him. The key State Department operative who brought them into the U.S. and assisted with this was William Casey. And that Nazi element was installed as a permanent branch of the Republican Party in 1973 when the chairman of the Republican National Committee was George Herbert Walker Bush and Richard Nixon was president of the U.S. The key spokesperson for the Crusade for Freedom was Ronald Reagan. So when Reagan came into power, we basically had the Crusade for Freedom. Reagan was the spokesperson for it. His campaign manager and the later CIA director was William Casey. His vice president was George Herbert Walker Bush. And most of his early key appointees, George Shultz, Caspar Weinberger, Richard Allen, Alexander Haig, they were all Nixon staffers. One of the key Ronald Reagan aides was the deputy director of public liaison. That was a woman named Ekaterina Chumachenko, who was a top operative of the main OUND front in the U.S., the UCCA. 1943, Adolf Hitler put together an organization called the Committee of Subjugated Nations. It was a coalition of SS-linked groups, the Romanian Iron Guard, the Hungarian Arrow Cross, the Croatian Ustashi, the Bulgarian National Front. The main one was the OUND and other Eastern European fascist groups. This was then renamed the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. It was headed up by Yaroslav Stetsko, who was the wartime prime minister of the Nazi satellite state in Ukraine. In the early 1980s, his personal secretary was a guy named Roman Zvarych, S-V-A-R-Y-C-H. He became the Ukrainian Minister of Justice under both Tymoshenko governments. He was Minister of Justice under Viktor Yushchenko. Viktor Yushchenko married Ekaterina Chumachenko, Reagan's former deputy director of public liaison and a top OUND operative. She then became First Lady of Ukraine. And as we looked at in, for the record, 781, Yushchenko then appointed an OUND operative named Vladimir Vyatrovich to head up the Institute for National Memory, which rewrote the history of Ukraine during World War II in a pro-OUND fashion to pave the way for the ascension of the OUND, areas like Svoboda, Pravi Sector, and others. Now, from Covert Action Information Bulletin issue number 35 from the fall of 1990, an article called "The Free Congress Foundation Goes East" by Russ Belange and Lewis Wolf. This talks about the political heritage of the phenomenon spoken about by Dovid Katz in that Consortium News article. This, again, is the fall of 1990. With the rapid pace of political change sweeping Eastern Europe and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, many opportunities have emerged for Western interests to intervene in the politics of that region. In some cases, such a vacuum has been created that virtual strangers to the area several years ago are now able to actively participate in changing those societies from within. These interventions are not really being practiced by mainstream organizations. The involvement of the United States far right brings with it the potential revival of fascist organizations in the East. One U.S. group, the Free Congress Foundation, has been playing a role in Eastern Europe and Soviet politics and has ties to Boris Yeltsin and the Interregional Deputies Group, or IRG, in the USSR. The Free Congress Foundation was founded in 1974 by Paul Weyrich as the Committee for the Survival of a Free Congress. Weyrich, who had started the Heritage Foundation the year before, was heavily funded by the Coors family for both organizations. And it then talks about how the Free Congress Foundation began networking not only with the IRG inside of the former USSR and Boris Yeltsin, but other elements in Eastern Europe. Skipping down. One of the key dangers in this agenda is the political vacuum it creates, allowing ultra-nationalist forces in a number of republics to take power. Such nationalist and fascist elements are already evident in Lithuania and the Ukraine. In the latter republic, the pro-Nazi Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN, has gained influence in several parties and has mobilized large demonstrations that honor OUN leaders who abetted Hitler's war on the Eastern Front. Similarly, several Sir Judas deputies served in German military units in Lithuania, and Sir Judas has made declarations against ethnic Russians living in Lithuania. According to some reports, Poles have also been denigrated. Skipping down. The Free Congress Foundation is not entirely disconnected from the history of the OUN. The treasurer of the FCF board is Georgetown University professor Charles Moser, M-O-S-E-R. Moser also serves on the editorial advisory board of the Ukrainian Quarterly, published by the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, a group dominated by the OUN. The Ukrainian Quarterly has praised military units of the German SS and otherwise justified the OUN alliance with the Third Reich, which reflects the fact that the OUN was politically and militarily allied with Hitler and the Nazi occupation of the Ukraine. The OUN, an international semi-secret cadre organization headquartered in Bavaria, has received financial assistance from the late Franz Josef Strauss, the rightist head of the Bavarian state. Strauss also had a working relationship with Weyrich. We looked at Strauss, by the way, in For the Record 805, in connection with the Munich Oktoberfest bombing of 1980 and the cover-up of same. Skimming down. Finally, Free Congress Foundation's insinuation into the politics of the East must be judged by their selection of Laszlo Pastor to head their Liberation Support Alliance, quote, which seeks to liberate peoples in Central and Eastern European nations, unquote. Pastor's involvement in East European politics began in World War II when he joined the youth organization of the Arrow Cross, the Nazi Party of Hungary. When the Arrow Cross was installed in power by a German commando operation, Pastor was sent to Berlin to help facilitate the liaison between the Arrow Cross and Adolf Hitler. Pastor was tried and served 2 years in jail for his Arrow Cross activities after an anti-communist government was elected in 1945. He eventually came to the U.S. and established the ethnic arm of the Republican National Committee for Richard Nixon. He brought other Nazi collaborators from the Eastern Front into the GOP. Some were later found to have participated in mass murder during the war. The dormant Arrow Cross has surfaced again in Hungary, where there have been attempts to lift the ban on the organization. Pastor spent several months in Hungary, and when Weyrich later conducted training there, he was provided a list of Pastor's contacts inside of Hungary. Weyrich reports that he conducted training for the recently formed and now governing New Democratic Forum. Pastor claims to have assisted some of his friends in Hungary in getting NED funds through his advisory position with the National Endowment for Democracy. In 1989, he spoke at the Heritage Foundation under the sponsorship of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, or ABN, a multinational umbrella organization of emigre fascists and Nazis founded in alliance with Hitler in 1943. It is led by the OUN. Pastor spoke for the Hungarian organization of ABN, which is the Arrow Cross. That basically is how we wound up with all of these fascist organizations being revived in NATO countries in Eastern Europe. Now, jumping to the present, guess who is telling us all about, yes, Russia is invading Ukraine? New York Times, August 22nd of 2014. Notice the inflammatory headline. Russians open fire in Ukraine, NATO reports, unquote, by Michael Higgins and Andrew R. Gordon. NATO officials said that the Russian military had moved military... NATO officials said that the Russian military had moved artillery units inside Ukrainian territory in recent days and was using them to fire at Ukrainian forces. The NATO allegations are based on intelligence reports from several alliance members, Western officials said, and the allegations generally echoed Ukrainian claims in recent days of an expanding Russian military involvement in support of pro-Russian rebels who are battling to hold off a Ukrainian offensive. So look, who is making these reports? And again, it's coming from Latvia, Lithuania, and others. From Is It War? Ukraine conflict definition softens in West by Gregory Discusi, D-I-S-C-U-S-I, from Bloomberg Business Week of August 28th of 2014. Skipping down, Latvia's Foreign Minister Edgars Renkevich said on Twitter that Russians' actions amount to a war that should be taken up by the United Nations Security Council. Again, as Mortsal asked so presciently decades ago, how many lies can you allow yourself to believe before you belong to the lie? Now, we have also seen satellite photos maintaining that Russian self-propelled artillery and armor are actually inside of Ukraine. I would note that these satellite photos, and again, I can't say whether or not they are. I'm not there. But these photos are not coming from U.S. reconnaissance satellites. There is a link to some articles that have those photos. They are coming from a private company called Digital Globe. That's one word. That company was formed in 1992 when, in the last year of George H.W. Bush's administration, that's the same George H.W. Bush for whom CIA headquarters is named, the same George H.W. Bush who was deeply involved with the OUNB and ABN milieu, a piece of legislation was passed permitting private companies to begin providing satellite reconnaissance. One of those companies was Digital Globe, which is giving us these satellite, quote, images, unquote, of Russian armor inside of Ukraine. From Wikipedia, about the formation of Digital Globe. Worldview Imaging Corporation was founded in January of 1992 in Oakland, California, in anticipation of the 1992 Land Remote Sensing Policy Act. And skipping down after the renaming of the company, its founder was Dr. Walter Scott, who was joined by co-founder and CEO Doug Gerrell in late 1992. In 1993, the company received the first high-resolution commercial remote sensing satellite license issued under the 1992 Act. The company was initially funded with private financing from Silicon Valley sources, who, I would add, and interested corporations in North America, Europe, and Japan. Dr. Scott was head of the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory's Brilliant Pebbles and Brilliant Eyes projects, which were part of the Strategic Defense Initiative. That, by the way, was the missile defense system known as Star Wars. His co-founder, Doug Gerrell, by the way, has a background including participation with the Carl Zeiss Corporation that I spoke about in For the Record 272, a long-standing Nazi-linked German company that was moving into key U.S. satellite imaging in the early part of the century. A couple of other points of information here. We have previously read, and I'm going to briefly touch on an article from Strategic Culture of June 9th of 2014. It's by Peter Lee, The Durability of Ukrainian Fascism. Now, this talks about the UPA, the Ukrainian Partisan Army, part of the military wing of OUNB, and a guy named Roman Shukievich. Roman Shukievich headed up the Naftogal Battalion, or Einsatzgruppe Naftogal, that liquidated much of the Jewish and Polish population of Lviv. A street there was renamed in its honor. And his son is a fellow named Yuri Shukievich. Now, we're going to talk about an offshoot of that, and Pravi Sektor. Speaking of Yuri Shukievich, he is a core figure in the emergence of the key Ukrainian fascist organization formation, Pravi Sektor, and its paramilitary. And Pravi Sektor's paramilitary, the UNA, UNSO, is not an unruly collection of weekend warrior wannabes, as Mr. Higgins might believe, in talking about their participation in the Afghan war. With apparently good reason, the Russians have also accused UNA, UNSO fighters of participating on the anti-Russian side in Georgia and Chechnya. After formal Ukrainian independence, the military elected Yuri Shukievich, the son of OUNB commander Roman Shukievich, as its leader, and set up a political arm which later became Pravi Sektor. By the way, a current advisor to Mr. Poroshenko is Roman Svarich, the secretary to Yaroslav Stetsko. We have an article, actually a chapter from academia.edu by Per Anders Dudling, Schooling in Murder, Schutzmannschaft Battalion 201 and Hauptmann Roman Shukievich in Belarus in 1942, about the genocide that was launched by Roman Shukievich, Stefan Bandera, Yaroslav Stetsko, and their like. And that is available in the description for the show. Another conflict has been attracting our interest. That is, of course, ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. We're going to conclude briefly an article from ABC News of August 24th of 2014. ISIS, an incredible, unquote, fighting force, special ops, sources say, by James Gordon Meek, talking about ISIS's special military prowess. Well, where does it come from? Skipping down. Where did ISIS learn such sophisticated military methods, clearly shown after the first shots were fired? Probably the Chechens, one of the U.S. officials said. A Chechen commander named Abu Omar al-Shishani, who officials say may have been killed in fighting near Mosul, is well known for commanding an international brigade within ISIS. Other Chechens have appeared within propaganda videos, including one commander who was killed on video by an artillery burst near his SUV in Syria. It also talks about the military prowess of the Chechens fighting U.S. special forces in Afghanistan. So it looks like we are getting some blowback from our support for the Chechen insurgency, including the UNA, UNSO. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 808, Walking the Snake in Ukraine. The subtitle, How Many Lies Can You Allow Yourself to Believe Before You Belong to the Lie? This is being recorded on August 31st of 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.